Today I want to talk a little bit about receptive awareness. It's something that many teachers teach, I guess, but there was one teacher that came across quite some years ago, and I had forgotten about this whole teaching of this teacher until I was thinking of, like, what shall I do tonight? And then I kind of went through my files and everything, and I was like, oh wow, yeah, I remember that now. And I thought, like, oh, this is cool. And so I want to talk about that. The teacher is called Longpoor Viradamo. He is a Canadian monk in the Thai forest tradition. I think he's originally from the UK, but when he was 4 years old, he moved to Canada. So I think it's Canadian, mostly Canadian then. And so I like this phrase of receptive awareness. And awareness in this context basically means the same as mindfulness. But I think receptive awareness kind of feels a little more natural than receptive mindfulness. Mindfulness feels a little different for some reason, the word mindfulness, at least for me, but maybe for you, receptive mindfulness works too. And so this is about receiving our experience. And so that's the kind of the, like, I can stop here, basically, the talk, but I'll talk a little bit more about it. And so it's one way to approach the Vipassana practice. So what often happens is that we kind of go out there and try to find, like, what we're supposed to be mindful of, you know, what we're supposed to be aware of like, what's the next thing, what's the next thing. But this teaching really points to not doing that and to be receptive, to allow what's already here, to let that kind of arise naturally in awareness. And it's kind of a teaching that also points to just simply being, and then just, you know, being, and then being with whatever arises, so kind of this receptiveness. And so this Canadian monk, he gives this example of being on the beach. And maybe you can picture it right now that you're on the beach, overlooking the ocean and the vast sky. And in this moment, there's only this ocean and the sky. And what does that do to the mind? Does it quiet the mind down a little bit? Just being with the ocean and the sky. Sometimes we can touch into this silence and the spaciousness when we're just with this vastness. And so you can open your eyes again if you close them. There's this mode when we are in a situation like that, when we're in a location like that, where the mind kind of, it stops doing its normal criticizing and its normal judging and its normal thinking and analyzing. It kind of just is with this this beauty of nature. And so that can bring some silence. And so the silence and the stillness is not, it's not because of the ocean and the sky. It is because of this effect that it has of this quieting of the mind, this analyzing, this criticizing, just judging falls away for a few moments, and we're just present with the ocean and the sky. And so it's the receptivity of the mind that brings this stillness and this silence. And so when the mind is in this mode of simply receiving, then it we can experience the silence with any object. So we don't need the ocean or the sky for that, or we don't need a beautiful landscape or something else that is eliciting that in us. It's easier there, of course. But if we don't emphasize the object that we're observing, whether it's looking at something or listening to something or feeling something in the body or even in the mind, So we don't emphasize the object, but we emphasize the receptive aspect of awareness. And then there's this natural silence and stillness arising. And then even like mental objects, like even like unpleasant things like aversion, restlessness, doubt, whatever it is, can be experienced in that way. And so it requires a little bit of practice. And especially with these easier objects, we can practice and then we can use it on the more difficult ones. And so it's really kind of letting go of this tendency of the mind to look at an object and say, oh, this is beautiful, this is ugly, this is pleasant, this is unpleasant, etc. But to open ourselves with this receptive awareness. A quote from Langpur Viradamo: what do I need to do to let the object come to me? I need to stop thinking, analyzing, and criticizing, and I need to let the object arise in awareness just as it is. And when I do that, I am seized by the silence instead of the object. And so we can try it out right now. We can try it out with a visual object. So you can choose a visual object. And before we do that, it's not that we can always turn that off, of course, the thinking and the analyzing, but there can be little moments. And these moments can be more frequent and become more longer, so to speak. So with this exercise, we can try to see if there can be a little moment like that stops for a little bit, the analyzing, the criticizing, the judging, the having an opinion ready kind of thing, or thought even. So choose a visual object. And maybe, you know, you want to choose something. You could choose the Buddha statue or the flowers or something that might be easier. Or you could just choose anything that is in your visual field. And then stop for a moment with thinking, analyzing, criticizing, and let the object arise in awareness just as it is. Open yourself with receptive awareness to the object. And so let the object come to you. And so we're aiming to have this receptive awareness. So it's not so much about the object itself, it's about the quality of the awareness, the receptiveness. So then you can stop the exercise. And so it doesn't really matter for the mind what object the mind receives. When the mind is in this receptive mode, it can experience kind of the stillness around it. I don't know if you could experience it. I don't know if maybe you can maybe nod if you experience it. Some of you did. If you haven't experienced it, you can try it out later, or maybe with an easy object, like a beautiful view, for example. Trying to be receptive, trying to have this receptive awareness. Kind of like a pause. Like, you can also see it as a not doing anything. Like, stop doing anything and just be. That could also be an entrance to it. And so perhaps when you do this exercise, what I've noticed in my own practice is that how often there is a little bit of a veil of criticism, or a veil of like a judgment, or a veil of, even if it's very minor, like between me and the object, like, like the Buddha statue is beautiful or it's ugly or it's, you know, there's a little bit of like already a judgment in there, even though it might be a very minor judgment. It might be like slightly less than neutral, like just a little bit beautiful, or the flowers just, oh yeah, beautiful. You know, automatically these kind of judgments arise in the mind, and when we do an exercise like this, we can start to notice how often that actually happens and how much that colors all of our perception. And so if we look at that clearly, then what's actually happening is that it's never really the object that's kind of quote-unquote the problem. It's all these thoughts we have about it, all these judgments, all these analyzing that we do around it. That's what creates the most trouble in our life, the way we relate to the object. And so it's our mind that gives the object a certain value. Like the Buddha statue is like has high value because it's the Buddha statue. It's like important or something. Like my label for the Buddha statue is important. And while this little dust speck on the ground is unimportant, and I need to get rid of it even, you know. And so that's the mind giving it value, giving certain things value. One thing is better than the other. And then we can even get ourselves tied into knots. Like now we have this. Now I'm telling you all this, and then you're like, oh yeah, the Buddha statue is important. And then the next thought is like, oh, but I'm not supposed to think that. You know. So another layer is arising, looking at that as well. That is the mind just playing tricks on us. You know, the mind's just it's just a tendency of the mind to keep doing that. And our job to see it for what it is. Even those kind of thoughts, we can look at these thoughts, observe these thoughts with the same stillness, with the same receptive awareness, just receiving that thought of like, oh, yeah, I'm not supposed to think this, you know, that receiving that thought, that is possible. And so besides this Canadian monk, there are other teachers who emphasize receptive awareness. And one of them I spoke about before in my teachings is Sayadaw Utejaniya, this Burmese monk and teacher. And also Andrea Fella, meditation teacher on the West Coast. And Andrea is a student of Sayadaw Utejaniya. So both of them kind of more or less teach the same thing about this receptive awareness. But Andrea Fella often also gives this very simple instructions in her guided meditations that I sometimes also use, that I'm inspired by her. And it's very simple. It's relax, receive, allow. Just these three words, kind of dropping those in. Relax, receive, allow. And this really relaxing is also very helpful as a foundation for receiving objects. Because if we're really tense and really like, you know, caught up in something, then it's harder to, you know, experience the stillness. So the relaxation really helps with this kind of exercise. And then we can have this intention to relax, which is helpful for the relaxation. And that's what I often do in guided meditations, that I offer this intention, like may I relax, or may the body relax, or may this or that body part relax, which can be really helpful. And then we're, of course, not in control of whether or not relaxation happens. It's just this invitation that we can offer to the body and sometimes even to the mind, even inviting the mind to relax. And then the next instruction that Andrea gives is to allow, or the third one is to allow. And this allowing of whatever is here is really helpful in this receptivity. Because if we don't allow it, then there's basically a fight going on, like a push and a pull. And then, yeah, this allowing or this receptivity doesn't really work. So we need kind of this combination of relaxation, allowing, and receiving. And so allowing can also help, like our intention can also help with allowing, having the intention to allow. Like intention is actually a really important aspect of our practice. Intention can really shape our experience. So having an intention to relax without any expectations, that's important. Intention to allow without any expectations is really helpful to shape, to mold the experience. And sometimes, you know, that just doesn't work. Like, we're just too tense, relaxation just doesn't happen, or allowing just doesn't happen, we're just kind of in this little fight or struggle. And then the invitation is to open to that, to relax into that and receive the struggle, receive the tension, just as it is. And so whatever is going on, there's always a layer that we can receive. We can receive the struggle, we can receive the difficulty. We can begin wherever we are. So we don't need to have it all perfectly silent or perfectly relaxed or perfectly whatever. It can just be as it is, as imperfect as it is. And so this monk, Langpor Viradamo, he also points to that we can just receive the difficult mind states. That's also something he teaches. And just the effort that we need to make is actually not that much. It's a very gentle effort. And that's also like, if we put in too much effort, then, you know, this whole receptivity doesn't work because then we're trying again and we're kind of like out there, like going forward like that, leaning forward. And so the receptivity is really about like leaning back, so to speak, and receiving. And so if you know that you're aware, awareness is already present and there's not much else needed. And so this very light, relaxed, and receptive awareness of all the six sense doors, basically. It can be visual, like we practiced. It can also be a sound. It can also be a body sensation. It can be a smell, a taste, and thoughts, and emotions, and feelings. And then I think this does need some like repetition, this relaxing into this receptive awareness to make it part of our practice. Like I came across this like several years ago and I completely forgot about it. And so it didn't become like a main thing of my practice. I mean, I've done a lot of like relaxing, receiving, allowing, but this, how this monk is describing it to me feels like a little bit of a deeper layer, even like touching into this stillness and this silence. And so that's even a little bit deeper than just what Andrea Vella is talking about, for example, at least how I'm experiencing his teachings. But it can be very helpful to practice with it regularly, to touch into that stillness, because it's so wholesome, a wholesome way of being with the objects, all the objects that are in us, in our own body and mind, and also outside of us. And the way that, like seeing those ways that we're relating to the objects, all these layers that we put in between us and the object, us and the thing that is, whether it's in ourselves or the objects outside of us. And so we can apply this in our formal sits and walks, we can apply it in our daily lives. And I remember that sometimes this has happened naturally for me, like when I'm on like a train or something and I'm not using my phone, but I'm just sitting there and I'm just staring out the window, then it's kind of the stillness and receptivity automatically kind of happens because there's nothing else to do or something. And there's just kind of this flow of experience being received, nowhere to go, nothing to do. And that's kind of the inviting kind of aspects for this receptive awareness. Like, if there's no agenda, nothing to do, like just being with the present moment, being in the present moment, that's kind of a fruitful basis for this kind of practice. And so we can try that in our daily lives. Maybe we are sometimes, even in an Uber or Lyft, you know? Don't use your phone, but just sit there and enjoy the ride and just see what happens. Or perhaps we just want to, every once in a while, just sit and check in, do this exercise when we're looking just at, you know, something in our living room, you know, a plant or a chair or something. Just look at that and do the exercise. And sometimes we might find ourselves in these beautiful landscapes. You know, sometimes, you know, when you're driving around Richmond, you know, sometimes there's these hills and there's like, sometimes all of a sudden there's this beautiful like view over these other hills, you know, and then you could just get sucked into this kind of thing all of a sudden. And so some moments or some things are might be more suitable or easier, but others might be a little bit more difficult. But any moment can be suitable for this kind of practice. We can try it in any moment, especially if we use the kind of layering thing that, okay, I'm too tense right now. Well, maybe I can receive the tension. Maybe that can be here. And I want to end with a little story that Longpor Fioradamo tells. Something that's not so straightforward is when my mother died. I was with her for a long time, but the last 4 days were very, very difficult. I am not a medical person, and Mom refused to go to the doctor. So I did my best. And during those 4 days, on the third day, I realized I made a medical mistake. Understandable, but still a mistake. I had bound her legs too tightly. It was a very stressful situation. But having seen that I'd made this mistake, the feeling in my heart was awful. You know, you take care of your mom the best you can, and then you do that. Now, I hadn't done it intentionally. I hadn't said, I'm going to wreck my mom's legs. It wasn't that. It was just a situation. But it didn't really matter, because the emotional impact of seeing my mother in even more pain as she was dying was really, really horrible. So when Mom died, what do you think the memories were? Right, the memories were of this horrible thing. Now, unfortunately, I understood that this is memory. And because I understood it as memory, although it was terrible, very, very unpleasant, I could see that the suffering was different. And that was the thought. And where the thought was going was towards self-disparagement and guilt, self-flagellation. And I said, no way. I had to be very strict with myself, because that was the natural pattern. But the feeling, the memory of that, lived in me quite strongly for the first 3 months or so. It would come up almost every hour. And then it slowly faded over the year. Now, there was nothing wrong with that. It was neither right or wrong. It was the way it was. And so, if I had thought that the practice was somehow not having that feeling, I'd have been a mess. But the feeling was natural. It was Dhamma. And then someone said to me, oh, but you took such good care of your mother. And I didn't understand that wasn't the issue. I know I took good care of my mother, but the issue was this memory was so very powerful. And then, to bear witness to it, I had to keep coming back. Yeah, it's like this. It belongs. Ajahn Sumedho's teaching on that has been brilliant for me. He uses two phrases quite often. He says, it's like this, and it belongs. And they're very profound. If you don't just take them intellectually as some kind of tautology, but just take them, yeah, it's like this. That's receptivity. It belongs. It belongs. And so it was a very, very unpleasant experience. And I found that the more I can awaken to these unpleasant experiences in the heartfelt sense, this sense of receptivity, then I can bear witness to it. And in bearing witness to it, I begin to see cessation.